This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
It's not often you get to sit down with an archaeologist and talk about the broad range of their work, but that happened recently with Jody Magnus, one of the top U.S. archaeologists working in Israel. This program is another excerpt from my Upwards podcast interview in conjunction with her speaking appearance at Upper House on the University of Wisconsin campus on October 23rd. We talked about Qumran and the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls, of course, a perpetual biblical archaeology story. Even this year, some new 2,000-year-old texts were found in some caves near the Dead Sea. And the latest news, there's a new explanation for the function of Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Daniel Vainstub of Ben-Gurion University has suggested Qumran was not a place where people necessarily lived, but was a gathering place for an annual renewal ceremony, kind of a retreat center in the desert.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, but before we get started, let me just mention that my book on the archaeology of Qumran and the Dead Sea Scrolls, which was originally published back in 2002, the revised, updated edition just appeared in print in May. It's actually a product of the pandemic. When the pandemic started and I was stuck at home and the editor at the press had been bugging me for years to update the book, I thought, well, okay, so now I have time.
Something to do.
Yeah, exactly. Something to do. And my basic understanding of the site has not changed in big picture, but there are some significant differences. But anyway, first of all, about the quote-unquote recent discovery of Dead Sea Scrolls. You're right. There was a release that came out a number of months ago from the Israel Antiquities Authority. This is a little frustrating for me because of the way the term Dead Sea Scrolls was used in this announcement.
It's nowhere near Qumran.
Exactly. And so we have ancient scrolls from sites around the Dead Sea that date to various periods, but they have no connection with the site of Qumran or with the group that lived at Qumran, which was a Jewish sect that most scholars, including myself, think were the Essenes. When the term Dead Sea Scrolls is used, as for example in the title of my book, The Archaeology of Qumran and the Dead Sea Scrolls, usually what we mean is the scrolls associated with the site of Qumran that were found in the 11 caves surrounding Qumran that were deposited in those caves by members of the sect that lived at Qumran in the 1st century BC, 1st century AD, and include earliest copies of the Hebrew Bible and their own literature, their sectarian literature. Now, you can, you know, not incorrectly, use the term Dead Sea Scrolls to more broadly describe any ancient scrolls from the area of the Dead Sea without any connection to Qumran. And that's what we have here. And for this reason, by the way, many scholars now prefer to refer to the scrolls from Qumran not as Dead Sea Scrolls, but as Qumran scrolls or something like that. When they, in that release, used the term Dead Sea Scrolls, so I think for many people it connoted automatically a connection with Qumran, when in fact there is no connection at all to Qumran. What these are scrolls that were deposited in those caves or brought to those caves by Jews who were not at all connected with that sect, and in fact who deposited those scrolls in a slightly later period than the time of Qumran in the 2nd century AD and not the 1st century or BC or AD. It's a little frustrating because it got a lot of publicity as, oh, we have new Dead Sea Scrolls. And well, yes, there are new Dead Sea Scrolls, but they're not those Dead Sea Scrolls. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's just to clarify that. Not to say that the discovery is not important in and of itself, but to say that the term, in my opinion, muddied the sort of waters and maybe was deliberately intended to do so because
it always gets attention.
The term Dead Sea Scrolls, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, about this supposed new theory. So, yes, there is a publication, and that's another kind of frustrating thing in working in Qumran, which is that every time there's a new theory, you know, wow, blows up, there's lots of publicity. Oh, there's a new theory. What do you think? You know, in this particular case, it's not a particularly outlandish theory. I mean, there are, in my opinion, outlandish theories about Qumran. This is not one of them. But what's a little bit frustrating to me is that this theory is not actually a new interpretation. It's an interpretation that's been suggested, maybe not exactly the same, but pretty much along the same lines by other scholars. For example, Geza Firmesh, eminent Dead Sea Scroll scholar at Oxford, had suggested that the members of this sect gathered at Qumran for the annual renewal of the covenant ceremony. A number of years ago, a scholar named Ed Cook published an article in which he also suggested that Qumran was a place where members of this sect gathered. This supposedly new idea actually isn't really that much of a new idea. We'll just have to wait. I only saw sort of the publicized reports. I haven't seen the scholarly publication yet myself, so I have to wait and see what else there is in this new theory.
You're listening to an excerpt of my Upwards podcast interview with Jody Magnus, immediate past president of the Archaeological Institute of America.
You mentioned updating your book. What were the important updates that you thought needed to be included in the new edition?
In the time since I published my book back in 2002, there have been a lot of new theories proposed interpreting Qumran in different ways. Although, personally, I have rejected pretty much all of them on various grounds, I did include that in my book. I felt it necessary to address the various interpretations and to address why I think they're not as convincing or as well-founded as the traditional interpretation that this was a sectarian settlement or a center for a sectarian group. Another thing that I sort of expanded on is the presence of women at the site, right? And what is the evidence or not evidence for presence of women? To me, the biggest difference in the way that I view Qumran is because of a piece of evidence that I was familiar with previously, but now interpret differently. That is the animal bone deposits. Qumran has a number of peculiar archaeological features, features that are not paralleled at other archaeological sites. One of these are the animal bone deposits, where we have the bones of animals, all of them are kosher species, so basically sheep, cows, and goats, that were slaughtered, butchered, the meat was cut into chunks, the chunks of meat were boiled and roasted, and the meat was eaten off the bones, and the bones were then deposited in various areas around the outside of the settlement, either inside pots or covered with pieces of broken pottery. This has been the subject of a lot of debate. DeVoe decided that these were probably the remains of special ritual meals that were eaten by the sect, and that is the interpretation that I followed in my book in 2002.
That he was the original excavator.
That's right. Thank you. Yes, Roland DeVoe was the original excavator, and that's been sort of the mainstream opinion, although there have been other interpretations that have been suggested. There was an interpretation that was suggested, and which DeVoe considered and rejected, that these are the remains of actual animal sacrifices. And I changed my mind about the majority opinion and actually think that these are the remains of animal sacrifices. And the reason is that if you look at publications of ancient temples and sanctuaries around the ancient world, around the Mediterranean, around the Near East, including in the area of Israel, whether it's Tel Dan or Mount Gerizim or whatever, we have exactly this same phenomenon on the grounds of temples and sanctuaries. That is deposits of animal bones with pieces of pottery or sometimes with pots, sometimes mixed with ash, which, by the way, we also have at Qumran, which are basically the remains of the sacrifices that were burnt on the altar, but also the remains of the actual meat. Because when a sacrifice was conducted in antiquity, usually what happened is parts of the animal were burned on the altar and you get ash and pieces of burnt bone. But then the rest of the animal was cooked and consumed on the spot by the people who visited the sanctuary, by the priests and the worshipers. The remains of those animals that were burned or consumed on the spot were deposited as trash, basically, as garbage, on the grounds of the sanctuary. And you find these deposits all around the grounds of ancient sanctuaries. And when you look at DeVoe's description and the photographs of these animal bone deposits at Qumran and compare them with what you see in the archaeological record at ancient sanctuaries and temples around the ancient world, it's identical. They are absolutely identical in pretty much every single way. And so I now believe that what we have here are the remains of actual animal sacrifices. And this is really important because most scholars have rejected the possibility that the Qumran sect offered animal sacrifices. Now, many scholars believe that the Qumran sect refused to participate in the sacrifices offered in the Jerusalem temple on the grounds that the temple was polluted. But taking that additional step and establishing an alternate sanctuary at another spot where you're offering your own animal sacrifices from the sort of point of view of a Deuteronomy, you know, kind of point of view, that's something that has been very hard for scholars today to accept. It's actually not as far-fetched as it sounds. We know that there were other temples and sanctuaries in the ancient world that were dedicated to the God of Israel where animal sacrifices were offered, including the temple at Leontopolis in Egypt, which operated at the same time as Qumran and was presided over by priests who were descended from the same family that apparently was connected with the leadership of the Qumran sect, that is the Zadokites. So it's not actually as far-fetched an idea as it sounds. And so what I think is that the Qumran sect basically withdrew and constituted themselves as kind of an alternate or conceptual desert sanctuary They're operating sort of along the lines of what was going on with the when the Israelites are wandering in the desert wilderness, you know, and so with the sanctuary, you know, the tabernacle in their midst. I think that that's what's going on at Qumran, and I think that because of the archaeology. One of the things that scholars have hashed over and over again, and I discuss it in the book and on the article that I published before the book about this, taking certain passages from the Dead Sea Scrolls, the sectarian literature of the Dead Sea Scrolls, and trying to prove one way or another whether this sect actually did this sort of thing, right? Scholars have marshaled various passages to prove or disprove this. The problem is that, again, it's a matter of interpretation of the literature, a matter of who was writing it, when the literature was written, and there's no consensus among scholars about this. In my opinion, here, the archaeological evidence is unequivocal. And we simply, as modern scholars, have to adjust our view of what was going on in early Judaism at the time of Qumran in light of the archaeological evidence. So I think that's actually the biggest difference and the most significant difference between my previous Qumran book and the version now.
Should there be evidence of a sacrificial altar?
Then? Right. That is one objection to the idea that there was a sacrificial cult at Qumran is that there are no remains of an altar. Let me just say, first of all, Jean-Baptiste Humbert, who is the archaeologist at the French school in Jerusalem, the École Biblique, who is basically the heir, the successor to the original excavator Devaux, he published an article a number of years ago suggesting that, in fact, there was an altar located on the northern side of the site. He identified a structure as an altar. The problem is there are pretty much no pictures of it, the plan of it. It's impossible to see anything. It's very hard to see that is, in fact, an altar. I mean, I'm not ruling out the possibility that it is, but I can't see what he has published indicates that it's an altar. So there is that suggestion. But most scholars do not accept that, and most scholars say, well, there should be an altar. And that was actually one of the things that Devaux said also, that there's no altar. Now, in fact, altars could easily be dismantled and probably would have been a stone altar made of unhewn stone. There was continuous occupation at Qumran even after the site was destroyed by the Romans in 68, because the Romans left, you know, a garrison at Qumran after 68, the Devaux period 3. That's the sort of thing that easily could have been dismantled. And in my original article and then in the book, I looked at plans from Devaux's excavations and photographs. And there is actually an area on the north side of the site where there are thick deposits of ash mixed with pieces of animal bone and a few pieces of pottery. And in the middle is a void. A significant void. And it looks like the ash piled up around something that would have had, based on the dimensions of the void, would have had the dimensions of an altar according to biblical dimensions. Whatever it was removed and left this void. I suggest that that may have been the location of the altar. The ash around it would have been the ash that was, you know, scraped off from the sacrifices, and that at some point that altar was dismantled. You know, it's hard to prove a negative, so I can't prove that that's the case, but that's my suggestion. And I think, again, that the archaeology supports that possibility, even if I can't prove it.
Some new perspectives on Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, from Jody Magnus, Keenan Distinguished Professor for Teaching Excellence in Early Judaism at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. On October 23rd at Upper House on the University of Wisconsin campus, Jody Magnus will be lecturing on her excavations at Hukok, a Galilean synagogue. We have a link to all of the details on our website at radioscribe.com. This conversation is courtesy of Upper House and their Upwards podcast. We'll have more excerpts from that conversation in our next program. At our website, you can also find details of our Holy Land tours coming up in 2022, one to Israel and one to Greece and Turkey. And you can also find out how to subscribe to Artifacts, our quarterly biblical archaeology news magazine. That's all on our website at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through biblical archaeology on The Book and the Spade.